Coming up on KSDP News, the U.S. Navy is searching for World War II era explosives, and where are the Aleutian Terns? Stay tuned. Good afternoon. You're listening to KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint. I'm Marissa Williams with some local news on June 7th, 2017. This week, the U.S. Navy is searching for World War II era explosives that still may be hiding in waters around Unalaska. Leslie Younger is a spokesperson for the Naval Facilities Engineering Command. She says it's unclear how much leftover ordnance is lurking offshore, but she needs help from Unalaskans to find it.
We need the stories from grandma and grandpa or great grandma and grandpa who might have been here or found things in their beach combing or pulling up nets with their season's catch, because it's the history that the people who live here have that's going to help us accomplish this and keep everybody safe.
Younger says ordnance presents the biggest safety concern for recreational divers, boaters, and fishermen. That's why the Navy is searching waters close to town, no more than 3 miles offshore, and no more than 120 feet deep. Younger says they're using a remote-controlled underwater vehicle to investigate potential hazards and determine whether the objects are metallic. If they are, she says they'll deploy a microwave-sized camera to capture video of each item.
We're not going to remove anything. We're not going to touch anything. We're just going to record the GPS coordinates on it and then take all the data we collect, go back and study it, and then refine what we find.
The results of that analysis will be released in the fall of 2018. After that, Younger says the Navy will decide whether to remove any confirmed explosives. Governor Bill Walker has told lawmakers opposed to his plan to resolve the state's budget crisis that they should produce their own ideas.
It may not be a perfect compromise. It's the only compromise that's on the table. I would welcome other compromises coming forth. I submitted a compromise because I didn't see one.
While Walker supports the House plan for the budget, he favors a Senate proposal to draw money from the permanent fund earnings to pay for the state government. He also backs the Senate plan to cut BFDs to $1,000 and overhaul oil and gas tax credits. His final proposal is a so-called head tax that would require Alaska workers to pay one of five tax amounts based on their incomes. House majority leaders criticize the package, especially since it contains a deficit they say could lead to future cuts to education and other spending. But Senate President Pete Kelly says majority senators see the package as a step in the right direction.
Well, the governor's proposal was well received. That doesn't mean we're going to agree with everything on it. He established some goalposts that we can begin to negotiate to.
A state government shutdown will begin on July 1st if lawmakers don't reach a compromise. Walker says the effect will be widespread.
Registration of cars, selling houses, marriage certificate, death certificates, I mean, all sorts of things that we take for granted. I mean, I think we don't realize sometimes all we take for granted until suddenly we look at those services not going to be available. Commercial fishing would be significantly impacted, no question about that.
Administration officials say details of a potential government shutdown will be available later this week. Where are all the Aleutian Terns? In recent years, seabird biologists say the species numbers have dipped in Alaska. That has them wondering if the population is really declining or if the terns are losing track of their nesting grounds. Now, scientists with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and Oregon State University are trying to get a more accurate count. KDLG's Avery Lill has the story.
We're not going to remove anything. We're not going to touch anything. We're just going to record the GPS coordinates on it and then take all the data we collect, go back and study it, and then refine what we find.
Kelly Nesvasil pounds stakes into the spongy tundra by the lily pond near downtown Dillingham. It's a reliable haunt for Aleutian terns, which are notoriously hard to track down.
When they come up here, I mean, they're used to making big migrations and stuff, and they just don't have a lot of site fidelity or territory fidelity. So when you're doing these counts, you know, you go to a tern colony and count the number of birds, it can be really variable based on the time of day, the time during the season, just they may choose to go to one colony one year and another colony the next year.
Even as this wildlife biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game anchors a bow net, a handful of terns wheel overhead, cackling to each other and swooping low over the pond. Nesvissel's bow net is a spring trap, so it's an oval ring with a net stretched across it. She folds the ring in half so that it forms a crescent. At the press of a button on her remote control, it springs back into its oval shape. If one of the seabirds were standing within the net's circumference, it would be trapped, but not harmed. There are decoys around the traps to make them visible to researchers, and a Bluetooth speaker singing out tern calls to attract the birds.
That was a brief recording of Aleutian tern, Anikoprion aleuticus, recorded on June 20th, 2000.
Once they catch a tern, they'll put a radio tag on its leg and release it. It's standard procedure for nesting terns, but the team is actually trying something new for this species. They're tagging terns before they nest.
The hope is if we catch them before they nest, then we might be able to find new colony sites or places that we didn't know about, and that can help us kind of put into perspective the other colony counts as well.
Aleutian terns only nest in Alaska and Russia, and a steep decline in the number of nesting birds counted in the state has made it a high priority species for ADF&G when it comes to research and stewardship. Nesvissel estimates that there are about 30,000 Aleutian terns globally. Don Lyons is an assistant professor with Oregon State University. He's been studying terns for about 20 years, and he's working with Nesvissel on her research. He puts that population count into perspective.
There are several places in Alaska where they've been known to nest for decades. But over the last few decades, the number of birds that have been seen at those colony sites has really declined. In recent years, it's only been approximately 10% of the birds that were seen in the 70s or 80s.
If it's true that terns are declining, there could be a number of contributing factors. Lyon says that since the bird count is down across the state, it's likely that the cause would be widespread, not localized.
That might suggest factors like climate and just the way climate cycles or with the warming climate. It could be that something is happening to these birds when they migrate during the fall and winter. They migrate through the Russian Far East and Japan, China, and into Indonesia for the winter. And that could be being exposed to a lot of contaminants. There's a lot of industrial development.
But the picture is more complicated when you take into account birds that nest in Russia. As far as researchers know, terns that breed in Russia and Alaska spend time in the same places over the winter.
Talking to experts in Russia, where this bird also breeds, they believe their population is pretty stable. And so that's a bit of information. It's one of those facts that we don't understand right now.
So the goal is to cut through this Gordian knot by collecting more data.
So we're trying to do some detective work to find out if their declines at known colonies is real or whether they're just moving around. A couple ways we're trying to do that, we're trying to put out some radio tags that communicate their location to a satellite network. And we're hoping that if we get some birds tagged, that they'll wander around and kind of show us the neighborhood and hopefully show us some new colonies that we don't know about.
To maximize their week in Dillingham, the team will scout the area by plane, fly up the Wood River to Sheep Island, look for birds at Snake Lake, and check out former nesting grounds at Grassy Island. But they'll spend the majority of their time at the Lily Pond. A camouflage tent is set up near the edge of the water. That's where they watch the bow nets through a spotting scope. They have 7 radio tags that they hope to attach to birds in western Alaska. If they don't use all the tags in Dillingham, they'll use them when they travel to Platinum in the coming weeks. This trip to Dillingham is early days in what promises to be a long project for researchers. Nesvissel anticipates that it will be a couple of years before they begin drawing conclusions. As with most questions of ecology, the answer to what is happening with Aleutian terns could have ramifications up and down the food chain.
They're definitely a kind of a canary in a coal mine species for the coastal environment and what changes may be going on there that might impact us.
With the help of some modern trapping and tracking technology and some old-fashioned shoe leather sleuthing, these researchers are aiming to find out how many Aleutian terns there really are in Alaska and where they're making their summer homes. The hope is that with better data, better decisions can be made about how to manage the Aleutian tern and its environment. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
And that's the news from Sandpoint. I'm Marissa Williams, and you're listening to KSDP 8:30 a.m.